Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I like the way you do.
All right, you're listening to Heritage Radio Network. This is Eat Your Words, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. Today, we're talking with some guests who came from very, very far away on this planet. But to introduce them a little bit, you know, this day and age, we look at our social media a lot, and I get a serious case of wanderlust most of the time, looking at all the images. And also usually very, very hungry. So traveling and food are just an everyday constant sort of deluge across images every day. And but not a lot of people actually cook when they travel. I think that, you know, you go out to eat. That's a common way to explore the food offerings in a new place. My guest has a different philosophy on that. Her name is Sarah Glover. Actually, two guests. We have Louisa Brimble, food photographer, and Sarah Glover, who is a chef and the author together, I guess. She wrote, Sarah is the author. Louisa is the photographer of an amazing new book called Wild Adventure Cookbook. So, hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, Louisa.
Hi, Kathy. Hello. Thanks for having us here.
Yeah. Thanks for coming from Tasmania.
You're welcome.
I was trying to lead up to that with suspense, but it didn't quite happen. So I was just mentioning a little bit, like in New York City, some people still think of me as this crazy person who went on a quest to not go out to restaurants for 2 years, which I chronicled in my first book, The Art of Eating In. And I would have to say that your philosophy that you share in this cookbook, the recipes here, the stories, is much more badass than that. This is all about cooking in the wild.
Yeah.
So how did that become your forte?
Well, I grew up in Tasmania, and I guess for those listeners that don't know where it is, maybe Google it because it's down near Antarctica. So literally the bottom of the world. And as a child, my brothers and I would, you know, go out and go surfing, and we would often light a fire on the shore of the beach because it was freezing cold and, you know, cook something. Back then it was pretty much just baked beans and jaffles, which are like a toasted sandwich put in cast
grilled
iron.
Grilled cheese.
Exactly. Okay. Delicious. So for me, I guess it was always part of my upbringing and my DNA, and I loved being outdoors ever since I was a little girl. So I guess I wanted to become a chef, and the whole idea of being stuck in a metal kitchen under fluoro lights didn't really gel with me and my personality. So I took a bit of a detour in my career and then ended up back in the outdoors doing what I loved, which was cooking. So it took many years for the whole two to come together.
Yeah.
But it did magically.
Yeah, it sounds like you really went with your gut on that, and you found an amazing photographer in Louisa. And tell me about the genesis of this project, because you were working as a chef and you decided, you know, screw that indoor cooking nonsense. And I'm going to write a book.
Yeah.
And you guys created a Kickstarter campaign for this very book that I'm holding.
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. And it's interesting because actually it just came to me as you were saying that Louisa and I actually met on the beach over food. So in the outdoors.
That's exactly right. I was so impressed.
About that. What were you guys eating?
Well, I was looking for, you know, surfer girls to be part of the film project that I was working together. And Sarah was one of them. And they went surfing, you know, film was taken. And after the surf, they came back. And then Sarah just pretty much laid her longboard on the sand and then started putting out some food, like her bikis. And I was like, this girl is so cool.
Yeah, like a thermos.
And then, yeah, and the thermos and everything. I was just shooting that. And then a publishing online guide actually called Broadsheet actually saw what I was taking photos of. And after that, basically they said, can you photograph Sarah for us? So, yeah, basically that relation, you know, kind of,
Started then. It actually wasn't for another couple of years till I discovered my like love for cooking and eating and taking photos in the outdoors, because I still hadn't, the light bulb still hadn't gone off for me at this moment, because within those 2 years I'd actually moved over to New York and I actually had a restaurant in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. And it's not there anymore, but it was called St. Balmain. And I sold my cookies over here also downtown. And yeah, and then I came back to Tasmania and I wanted to do my pastry certification. So I was at school and then I was working in a restaurant that cooked over fire. And that's when I fell in love with the whole cooking over fire, and that you could combine being a chef with, you know, the fire. And then Louisa was coming down and I actually wanted to shoot women surfing in Tasmania in the wild, because it was such a foreign concept to so many people. You know, they associate surfing and warm and bikinis, but for me that was never my upbringing. It was always men's wetsuits, because there were no women's, and freezing cold water and fire and food. So then captured that in our very first shoot together in Tasmania. Yes. And then from there we birthed Wild.
Yeah, and it was basically thinking about the fact that how can we make, you know, because I really wanted to do a cookbook, and we were always thinking, how are we going to make this cookbook different? Because all the cookbooks that we that you actually see in the bookshelves are all like photographed in a studio,
right.
And we thought, why don't we just go out and photograph outdoors and just shoot you in situ? This is what we should be shooting.
Yep.
So. Yeah, all of that was taken outdoors.
This is real.
Yeah.
and I guess what's kind of interesting about this book too is, for me, you know, like I grew up in Tasmania, but then I actually moved to the mainland and I was in Sydney, so I lived at Bondi Beach and New York. And so I had this kind of holistic approach to, well, for me, like cooking is not my wild is not only just Tasmania. My wild could be on the shores in Bondi. It could be in a big city like this. Like there's no – for me, when I wrote this book, I didn't want people to be limited to having to find the perfect setting. You know, it could be on a out the back of your car, or, you know, in a little pool of water.
Car camping. And that's more realistic to me. So, I mean, but, you know, looking at these photos, some are on the beach, but it's a little bit region agnostic. I mean, you capture the moment of the food and the smoke rising from coals and stones and, you know, whatnot. It's about just being out in the wild.
Yes. You know,
it could be anywhere.
Exactly.
I get that sense.
Definitely. And I think I love... you know, like your story of like wanting to eat inside in New York, and I think
I'm very humbled right now.
Yeah, no, but it's kind of cool, because you know everyone does eat out because they want to have community.
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of people live by themselves or, you know, in small apartments, and they want community around a table, and they want atmosphere and family. And so for me, you know, growing like this book was about inspiring people to have community in nature. You know, and that you could still pack a, you know, a napkin of food and have a picnic wherever you want to. And it doesn't have to be a bag of Doritos and, you know, a block of cheese. Let's think outside that box.
Right. And it's about being with other people too.
Yeah.
If I could read a little bit, you write here, that reminds me, you write, this book at its core is about the connection between the land and the food we eat, about cooking simply surrounded by the wilds. And, it you know, you summarize things very simply, but I think that there's an interesting paradox going on right now, because today, you know, people can get so intimidated by cooking because they see beautiful images mm-hmm. everywhere. Yeah. In fact, a food writer, J.J. Good, just wrote a piece about this recently on Taste. You know, is it okay to cook normal food or boring food? You know, now I see all these beautiful images. So how do you balance the sort of aspirational aspects of what you're doing that is so inspiring and motivating with something with like the realistic? What do you think?
I think that the book itself is designed to give people aspiration. So mm-hmm. it's there to inspire people to give it a go. So, you know, I mean, for me, like, I never thought I was a stylist, but I actually styled the whole book myself. So we've not had one stylist, not one thing was actually shot indoors. And then I realized, actually, you know what? I have my own sense of style and I have my own sense of creativity. I think everybody has that, but the problem is everyone's looking to their next door neighbor to see what they're doing and they're trying to copy or mimic that. Mm-hmm. So I think anything can be beautiful if you're bringing your own sense of creativity to it. Whether you feel you have that or not, you know, that's like the beautiful thing of giving, you know, when you create a meal, it's like something you're actually wanting to give to someone and share with someone. So,
and in a sense, when we created this book, we weren't really thinking about the styling part so much about it. I mean, because Sarah naturally just puts that together,
and
we didn't need to do it. Exactly. No, we didn't need to do that, because the idea of it is like, you know, if you just put it on the ground or where she is actually cooking it, the texture and the contrast and the colors are already all there in there. So there's really no point in, you know, styling that, because it's right there. It's right in nature.
And shooting in the wild.
Exactly.
Was that challenging for you, Louisa?
Well, it's so funny. A friend in the interview in the Q&A last night at Neighborhood Studio. They said, "Oh, you know, how challenging was that, the shooting with the lighting during the shooting?" And then I said that, you know, we were actually shooting that a lot more at, you know, like sunrise or sunset,
mm-hmm.
And we never really had any trouble with the harsh light on midday, mm-hmm. And I actually quite really love it because, you know, it's the really good contrast with the light. So I think we were shooting a lot more. Yeah. We would probably be shooting like a lunch at breakfast, but it kind of still worked.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, obviously for me being the person watching Louisa discover, you know, photography in the outdoors, you know, there's moments where we would shoot and she'd be frustrated with the light and I'd be shadowing it, and I've seen over the years this progression, and she's like, no, I love the light now and I love the shadows that this light creates, and I love the contrast of the stone with the food. And so I feel like, as much as my self-discovery of like cooking in the outdoors, she's discovered photography in the outdoors,
right?
Which and is I think beautiful. I just want to exclusively do that.
I can see it. Yeah. I think there's something just so genuine too about this project, that you guys were doing it and learning as you did it, but also discovering that by doing this, I think you wrote somewhere, I can't remember, Sarah, that, you know, everything just tasted better, even if it was, you know, no nonsense ingredients. I think in the beginning you made a pizza just by kneading the dough on some flat rock and putting normal ingredients on top of it, but it like tasted better than any pizza just because.
Yeah, it really did. I think it is something about being in the space where this produce came from, you mm-hmm. know, and it's, I don't know, if you've never tried it, listeners out there, I recommend you do it, because I think you'll have this same like moment of, yeah, it does.
And I think it's also part of like, it's the sense of adventure.
Mm. Yeah.
That, you know, you're doing out of something different, like out of the normal, you know.
Right.
It's like, even if you just pack, you know, I mean, it's that sense of, sometimes I'll just want to break the norm of like having dinner. So I would like end up just packing our dinner and go to the park.
Right.
And then, you know, and
the unexpected.
Yeah, just the unexpected
things that can throw you away. That is so exciting. Let's cut to a quick little commercial break, but we're going to talk more. I would love to ask you about how to translate the wild cooking into New York City's urban jungle. So we'll be right back chatting more with Sarah Glover and Louisa Brimble.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
All right. And we're back chatting. We've got Sarah Glover, Louisa Brimble. I just said it right the first time. Okay. And their book is called Wild Adventure Cookbook. A little note about how this was produced. So you guys just did this out of your, like, you know, just sweat and hard work and Kickstarter funding of, like, what, 1,000 copies at first or two?
I think we're 3,000 copies.
3,000 yeah. copies. And yep. then we actually have the publisher of Prestel, or actually, Holly, what is your title there?
The commissioning editor.
Commissioning editor of Prestel here. It was discovered. It was discovered by Prestel, Holly, and you guys have now printed it for an American audience, yep. meaning, right, like ingredient lists are...
Yeah, so we kept it accessible for actually... audiences around the world, so mm-hmm. you can it'll make sense to you the recipes whether you're in Australia or the UK or North America, mm-hmm. for instance. So we included both US and metric measurements, yeah.
But you retain Sarah's voice because I learned a lot of slang that is used in Tasmania that I had no idea.
We did. It seems so key to the book. So we couldn't take it out. Yeah.
I had no idea that you guys are even called Tazzies.
Yeah, Tazzies.
Tazzies. Okay. All right. I guess, yeah.
Yeah, no, and also I was, I really enjoyed working with Prestel as well and with Holly because one of my things I really wanted to do was to keep the book as it was. Mm. Yeah. Because for me, I guess it is a bit of a biography almost of my life and my journey and the connections of with people that I've had. And that's how this book was produced. But might I add too, Louisa and I actually weren't funded when we started this project. So we actually funded this project out of our own pay and our own money. So when we would get money from work, for me at the time it was tips because oh my gosh. Working in a restaurant as a mm-hmm. waitress while I was at cooking school doing my pastry certification. And we would go away and we would shoot and we just started building this portfolio of recipes and photos and we were like, somehow this will turn into a book.
Yeah.
Faith.
Yeah. And then, as I was saying before, it wasn't, we didn't know, well, Sarah doesn't know what recipe it's going to be because when we go to a place, she would just find whatever ingredients she can find and just
like
cook
wild
it
oysters
right there and there.
And yeah. Scallops.
Yeah. Exactly. And then putting all the concept that she learned about, you know, because she's obviously a professional chef. Then she knows, you know, the flavor combinations and all that things. And so none of that was planned.
Oh, my goodness.
Ahead. So, and yeah, so when basically we thought about putting that on Kickstarter and because we thought when you're actually sending a proposal to a publisher, you will have everything already, including yeah. you know all your recipes and all your chapters planned out. But we didn't really have that because You know, when we created this book, we got nothing. We didn't know what recipes are going to be in there until it's created by Sarah.
Fabulous. It makes a better book and maybe a better, you know, each one makes it, that sense of discovery makes a better recipe or dish. And that sense of discovery is really, like, you know, evoked throughout this book. Like urchin butter and veg. I mean, that sounds so good to me. Yeah. And I love that it's so freeform because it could be any veg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And actually, yesterday I was at the Union Market, Union Square Market. Yeah. And
Green Market?
Yeah, I loved it so much. Oh. You know, I was like, I think, you know, a lot of this book was based off, you know, you go to a market or you see a road stall and you pick up some stuff and then you create a meal.
I love you that you encourage people to just like shop at places that are passionate about, you know, producers who are really passionate.
Absolutely. There's actually a whole page on produce and I talk a lot about farmers and supporting farmers and actually how much better your meal tastes when you get a bit of education and history around what it is you're eating.
Yeah.
So, and I really encourage people to, you know, have that education and to learn about that and have that connection because it's all about that your food will taste better, eating it outdoors, understanding where it's from, you know, and it's like you're paying homage, like, you know, and you're honoring the whole process, really.
Right. Yeah. And you're being open-minded to what comes your way. Mm. So on that note, since you have been to the Union Square Green Market, what, I don't know if you're going to be cooking in the wild during your stay in New York.
Well, actually, tomorrow night we're cooking at North Brooklyn Farm.
Okay, got it.
So I guess that's wild, you know, we're under the Williamsburg Bridge.
I guess, what would you say to New Yorkers? How can they kind of get, what should they do to start out? Is it a pizza? Is that an easy thing to start out with if they're a little, I don't know.
I think there's like I said, you know, the book is about inspiration. I mean, you could start by going to the markets, picking some produce up, taking a picnic blanket, putting it down on the grass, you know, you could bring some of your grandma's china with you if you want, and having a picnic, you know, you could bring a little gas, you know, portable, and you call them like a butane bottle of gas with like the little camping attachment and light it and, you know, boil some water and spaghetti and toss in some vegetables and voila.
And I think the good thing about what the Wild Cookbook too is it's not so rigid in a sense. Like, I like to read a cookbook and just be inspired by the process or what ingredients and it sparks your inspiration to just do stuff.
Well, I'm really inspired by your use of surfboards in your career, and I've never thought of that because I don't have a surfboard. But I can see that, you know, going out to the Rockaways, there are quite a few people who do that.
Yeah, I actually have surfed out there before too.
Great.
Freezing cold water.
Yeah. Freezing cold. Worse than Tasmania?
Oh, yeah, actually. It was like the end of winter and it was icy. I was like, okay, this is next level.
Oh, next level. Did you bring anything to cook? I don't think you can do fires. Unfortunately.
No, at the time, I was actually working here in New York and I was at the restaurant and I was like, I need to get my head in the ocean. And so I was not thinking about cooking that day.
Well, what are you going to be making at your dinner?
Ooh. Well, actually, we brought over some produce from Tasmania and so we've got some lovely beef.
What's that?
Tasmania.
Right. So what produce?
Oh, what produce? Yeah. So we brought over some beef from Cape Grim in Tasmania and I'm going to be cooking that over the open fire.
Cool.
We're allowed to light a fire there, which I'm very excited about.
That's awesome.
We're going to do the smashing pumpkins, which is in the cookbook also.
Oh, yeah. You throw them in the coals.
Yeah, you throw them in the coals for a couple of hours and let them go all mushy and then you sweet and then you get a shovel and smash it.
Amazing. And then how do you serve it after?
So we're just going to put it on a platter and I've made like this yummy tahini dressing and we've got some beautiful walnuts and some wood sorrel.
That's where the chef comes in. If I just served you a smashed pumpkin, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, anything that you're excited about cooking that you can't get in Tasmania that you that is something here, since you know this terroir, I guess, a bit?
Yeah, well, actually, we went through the North Brooklyn Farm space the other day, and we had a tour of the garden. And obviously here, it's like, you know, the end of summer and beginning of autumn, and there's just all this abundance of beautiful vegetables about at the moment.
Yes.
And we had, right now it's great. Yeah, I had a lesson in a lot of different types of basil or basil.
Okay, basil. Yeah, I'll go with that.
I can't remember the names of it, but all these different varieties that I was like, we don't have those
really?
Back home. Yeah. Maybe we do, but we just don't grow them. So not any specific Native American ingredients, because I've actually bought Native Tasmanian ingredients with
me. Nice.
But we will definitely be incorporating a lot of their vegetables from the urban garden in our dinner for tomorrow night.
That's so super exciting.
Maybe we'll share some images with you. Maybe make you a little box.
Oh, yes. By the way, you should all follow @LuisaBrimble. And that's L-U-I-S-A Brimble. And then @MissSarahGlover.
You got it.
All right. Because they're going to have a lot of adventures coming up. And you're going throughout the California coast for more. But who knows? Who knows where they will be?
Well, we were at California and Hawaii, because I actually just really wanted to go surfing.
You just wanted to go surfing. I'm sure there's better surfing out there than our freezing Rockaways.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see your adventures there.
Thank you.
But, you know, everyone now can get a hold of this book, which is super inspiring for the photographer, for the cook, for the outdoor enthusiast who doesn't think they are a cook, for the cook who is sick of being under the fluoro lights. That is a term I was not aware of before.
Neon.
It's amazing. So thank you so much for Wild Adventure Cookbook. And thanks so much, Sarah.
Thank you for having us today. What a treat.
Yeah. You guys are such a treat. All of you. And Louisa.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thank you.
And thank you, Holly.
Thank you. Yeah, it's
thanks
great.
For bringing this book to our audiences. All right. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. That I ain't never, 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 never had no loving like this before.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.